This is D.L. Hudson. Welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. I'm delighted to welcome the Irish composer John Kinsella back on Church and Culture. He's been on a number of times, but I can't get enough of his music. John, welcome back to Church and Culture.
Neil, thank you very much indeed for your kind invitation and your kind comments indeed.
And we're going to do something we haven't done before. We're going to talk about and actually illustrate your return to tonality. As many of our listeners have heard on previous programs, including those with Bob Riley and his book Surprised by Beauty, in which you are featured, we have talked about the dominance of Schoenberg's serial tone rose in the classical music establishment, but at age 45, you had mastered that art, and you decided to go back toward tonality. What prompted you to make that move?
Yes, well, in a peculiar way, using tonal or dodecaphony for a while, it kind of loosened up my training in classical harmony in that, and gave me sort of freedom. And I went down that road for a while until I discovered it was really a cul-de-sac in that that style of writing seemed to suppress any sort of reaching towards melodic content or expressive content. And I ended up with a kind of compromise style, which is slightly, I suppose, about 5 or 10% serialism plus 90% my own brand of tonality.
I want to give our listeners a little taste of what it is you turned away from, but in listening and re-listening to your 1977 String Quartet No. 3, on first hearing, I found it very difficult myself, but as I listened to it a few more times, it started making sense to me. Is that good?
Well, who's to say, you know, the composer is unique, the listener is unique, so it's a unique experience.
Well, it is in your previous style, but it has quite a powerful, presence. And so let's listen to the opening of John Kinsella's third string quartet. And this is the last piece he wrote before he did an about-face, embraced his own style of tonality. Let's listen to the first few minutes of String Quartet number 2.
Thank you.
Listening to the opening of John Kinsella's third string quartet from 1977, and even though it's, you know, obviously a very modern idiom, I pick up quite a few themes that present themselves and then return, and it's not a kind of language that's completely chaotic.
Yes, it's very much. I suppose looking back at it now, I hear it as a transitional work. You know, where my methods are basically serial, but the need to be expressive is kind of tussling with that.
Now, does the phrase serial mean that the composer chooses to create the tone row that he's going to use for the composition?
Yes. Yeah, you construct your tone row and create a series of intervals, you know, with two-note intervals, and work with that. So you have a great choice in constructing tone rows to either be totally atonal, or you can push it in a tonal direction too. But there are always compromises having to follow the 12 note rotation.
I want to come back to what we mean by tonality after we listen to a bit of the second movement of your third string quartet. Let's listen. From the second movement of John Kinsella, who's on the phone with us from Dublin, of his third string quartet. How does it make you feel listening to music that you wrote in 1977, John?
It's a very strange deal. You know, we're talking 40 years ago, and that's, I suppose, a lifetime in a way. But, you know, they're pieces are like children, you know, they kind of grow up with you, and you take the good and the bad with you. as they do.
and that's not bad. It's a very modern idiom, but even there was musical substance that someone who cares about
yes.
melodic lines and so forth can follow. Let's
yes.
listen to a bit of the final movement of your third string quartet. It was the final minute and a half of John Kinsella's third string quartet, written in 1977. It's a pity, John, that we don't have some recordings of your later string quartets to compare that to.
Yes, there are two major ones and a couple of shorter pieces I've written since then for quartet. I had a recording project to issue those on Toccata Classics, but the recording session hit the rocks, unfortunately.
Yeah, you were going to try to send me those tapes so I could see if we can rescue them.
Yes, indeed.
We're going to try to do that. Now, this switch
okay,
you made...
I'll certainly do that.
The switch you made had something to do with losing your wife, correct?
Yes, as it turned out, there was a quartet in Dublin at the time called the Testore Quartet. And at the beginning of 1977, they asked me to write this piece, which was for premiere performance in January 78. And I was writing it throughout the year, finished it in October. But as it turned out to be a diary of... my wife's final illness. I found out in May of that year that she was dying of cancer, and she died in December. So you mentioned earlier that the music sounded chaotic. Well, it certainly is, you know, with the conflicting emotions and the business of you know, shoving one's head in the sand and saying this is not happening, and then you realize it is, and then you come to terms with it, and then you learn to say goodbye, really.
Yeah.
So it just happened as things turned out. The commission and the circumstances just went in parallel.
John Kinsella is with us from Dublin. He is one of the major composers of the last 50 years, and we're very privileged to have another conversation with him. And we're going to move to some years later when you wrote a third symphony entitled Joie de Vivre. Quite a different
yeah.
mood you were in.
Very much so. Very much
what,
so,
what
yeah.
prompted that title?
Basically, the work is a tribute and it's dedicated to my parents. And... It's a thank you to them for giving me my existence, if you like. So it's not a joie de vivre in the you know normally accepted sense of high spirits all the time, but it's just a joy of being alive and a thank you for especially to them. So there are two main movements in it, the fast and the slow, and I see the fast one as a tribute to my father, and the slow one as a tribute to my mother, of course. And the coda, I like to think of as myself.
A little slip of a boy.
That's it.
Well, this is fortunately a recording that's available on Marco Polo, I believe. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And it's coupled with the Fourth Symphony, which we've dealt with in a previous show. This was premiered in what, 1988? No, 1990.
The first performance was in, I think it was, yes, I have it here, April 1990.
You didn't even write a symphony until you were, what, 57 years old or something? How old were you?
Yeah, I completed my first symphony when I was about 55, something like that. I began writing symphonies at roughly the same age that Beethoven stopped.
That's safe. That makes it safe comparison then, right?
Well, whatever. I'm not comparing the music.
Well, I was amused by reading the Gramophone review of your of this particular recording, where you're compared to about six different composers, including one that you deserve to be compared with, and that is Sibelius. Because I must say, as I listened to this again, I heard a lot of Sibelius I didn't hear the first time, and not imitative, but just hit that kind of. It's really a forward motion that I connect with Sibelius.
Yes, yes. I was in Finland in the mid-90s, and I met the great composer Rautavaara. And subsequently to that, I sent him a copy of that recording, and he told me that he had it playing one day, and his wife came in from the kitchen and said, "Surely that's not Sibelius, is it?"
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
He wrote me that.
That's great. Well, let's listen. And I would say to our listeners, this is one very good place to start listening to the music of John Kinsella, his third symphony called Joie de Vivre. Let's listen to the opening of the first movement. Bassoon player must just have loved you for that.
Absolutely. It goes right up to the very top of the bassoon register, right down. So fortunately, we had a brilliant player. That's the Adagio prologue, and the Presto then comes in immediately after that.
Well, you know, it starts out rather sad, but it kind of picks up, and it by the end of what we heard, it's kind of dancing around.
Yeah, it's kind of contemplative. I use the bassoon in the prologue to the first movement as an intermezzo. And an epilogue where he's kind of commenting on the events that are being portrayed, and that's the introduction where we come from a very contemplative kind of feel to rushing into the Presto Giocoso.
Well, let's listen
immediately after that.
Yeah, let's listen to the middle part of the second movement of your third symphony, Joie de Vivre. John Kinsella, that's very exciting writing. That's from the middle section of your second movement. And we got a was it a little touch of the bassoon we got on the way into that?
That's right, yes. Giving the wheel a spin again.
Now, is this your father?
Yes. Right to the end of the vivo section.
What kind of man was he? What kind of man was he?
Oh, he was great. He introduced me to music, brought me to concerts when I was very small, and we had very few concerts just in the immediate years after the Second World War. So I've a lot to thank him for, because he sort of put these things in front of me, and as it turned out, I had a great love for music very early on.
So he was a music lover?
He was, very much so.
Did he have the gramophone playing all the time?
Yes, funnily enough, we had one of these wind-up turntables. Do you remember those?
Yeah, well, I've seen them in antique shops.
Yeah, you wouldn't remember them, of course, yourself, but with the loudspeaker, you wind up for each side of the 78, and you change needles very frequently as well. So you might have Beethoven's, one of his symphonies on about 10 discs, with about 4 minutes each side.
Did you keep any of that from your parents, the 78 records or the wind-up phonograph?
No, unfortunately not. No. But we had a good collection, yes. He was a great lover of singing, too. People like Peter Dawson, the Australian baritone, people like that. I don't know if the name Charlie Coons rings a bell with
mm-hmm.
you.
Yes.
great American pianist, kind of jazz pianist. He played a lot of his stuff too, and then the classical repertoire as well.
Well, we're going to take a short break, John, and come back and finish your third symphony and go to a little later in your career to the wonderful Ninth Symphony. We'll be back with John Kinsella, who's talking to us from Dublin, after this short message. With John Kinsella, Irish composer of great note, talking to us from Dublin. We're always privileged to have him on our show, and he's a delightful guest, and he writes great music. And we're in the middle of his third symphony, the Joie de Vivre Symphony, which he wrote in 1990 after re-embracing tonality, the tonality that he had rejected to a certain extent during his early part of his career up to age 45. But let's listen to this will be the sixth track that we've played on this program. Let's listen to the opening of the third movement of the third symphony, the Joie de Vivre. Very beautiful opening of the third movement of John Kinsella's Third Symphony. John, that's so beautiful. You must be very proud of that of what you wrote there.
Yeah, I do like that passage. It's the only time I've used the saxophone in my symphonies. And, yeah, it just seems to work. You know, you hit the jackpot sometimes.
No, I had a lump in my throat. Now, is this about your mother? Is this the movement about your mother?
Yes, the slow movement is a tribute to her. And I suppose we, you know, the joy of life can be experienced through tranquility as well as vivaciousness, you know.
Yeah, it's marked tranquillo, correct, this movement?
It is, yeah.
Well, it's stunning, and I'm sure our listeners agree. Now, but I was a little unprepared for that chord at the very end of what we played.
That's right.
What is that to announce that things are going to get more complicated?
Well, not so much complicated as, you know, maybe like a shadow passing over things.
Yes.
If you
yes.
like. Although it's a rather vigorous shadow, but.
It was very vigorous. I mean, it was as if you'd had enough of this sheer beauty and you wanted to sort of get back to earth or something.
Well, yeah, it's just a reminder that life changes very quickly.
Yeah, life is both beautiful and ugly at times. So
absolutely.
Let's see how this third movement closes. The Joie de Vivre symphony. This is the ending of the third movement we were just listening to. Been listening to the end of the third movement of John Kintzler's Third Symphony, and John, I must say that you know, the discordant chords return, but they're not quite so discordant.
Not at that stage yet.
But at the end, you have this kind of very dark. Was it out of the tuba? This dark note.
Yes, the tuba there. Yes, indeed.
But it ends on a kind of. Not an up note, but a ever so slight down note.
Yes, 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 yes.
Now, you do these things on purpose, so I'm asking you, why did you do that?
Well, looking back over, it's difficult to remember exactly what one's motivation might be at a particular point, you know. But that just seemed to be the right thing to do at that time.
Did your parents get to listen to this symphony?
No, unfortunately. My dad had died in 1971 and my mom in 1985, so I presume they have heard it all right.
Oh, absolutely. And on a perfect orchestra stage, right?
Yes, absolutely.
They've got the Berlin Philharmonic of 1926.
Oh, yes.
Let's listen to the entirety of the fourth movement. And is this you in the fourth movement?
This is the epilogue, yes.
Yes.
And
okay.
In fact, if one listens carefully, you hear little motifs from the Presto Giocoso movement and the Adagio mixed together.
There we go. The fourth movement, the epilogue of the Third Symphony of John Kintzler. Well, John Kinsler, if that's you, you turned out to be a rather lively lad.
Absolutely, at that stage, anyway.
Well, that's just a wonderful work, the Third Symphony. That was written and performed in 1990 and dedicated to your parents. And really one of my favorites of your works. But then that changes. The more I listen to your music, the more I like one than the other, and get a little deeper, and that's the way it's supposed to be. That's why we call it classical music, because it's not something you can comprehend
in
one listening.
Yes. Our mutual friend Martin Anderson maintains that I should write another movement, that he doesn't think it finishes properly.
Oh, really? So, how does he want it to finish?
He just feels it needs a different finale, an extra movement. But we agree to disagree on that.
Okay. Well, he certainly served your music well with his wonderful recording of your fifth and tenth,
very much so,
which we treated on a previous program. We're going to jump ahead now to your ninth symphony, which is one that we have not talked about previously on this program. And this, you were 80 years old when you wrote this, right?
2004.
2012.
Oh, 2012, that's the 10th symphony.
Oh, this is 2004.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were a little younger.
Yeah, 68 and 4, yeah, 72. This is the one with the Irish Chamber Orchestra.
Yes. And we're only going to pop in the last two movements, and you thought that it would go well with what we had previously heard, the Third Quartet and the Third Symphony. Why did you pick this?
Symphony number 9, yes.
Why did you pick this?
Well, you suggested, interestingly, to just include a short piece with the quartet and symphony.
Yes.
And it struck me that maybe the extract from just towards the very end of the ninth symphony, which is for strings only, and which is based on the chorale Jesu meine Freude, towards the very end, I take the great risk of quoting literally from Bach's chorale setting with my own comments around it on the orchestra. It's a moment where, after a lot of striving, one has reached a lovely plateau, which is characterized by the Bach setting, and the orchestra is more or less saying, yes, this is really what we want.
And
I thought that extract might be of interest.
It is. But tell us what precedes it. Can you describe the Ninth Symphony in general?
Yes. As I say, it's for strings. It was commissioned by the Irish Chamber Orchestra, which is a string-only orchestra. And they originally asked me to write a concerto for string orchestra. But at the time, I was thinking of writing a symphony, and I made a compromise in my head that I would write a three-movement symphony, but I'd precede each movement by a very virtuosic recitative, which I thought might satisfy their wish to have something brilliant, and my own wish to write another symphony. So I intertwine, like, as a recitative, then the first movement, recitative 2, largo, recitative 3, allegro, and then a coda. So that's more or less how the work evolved. And then I had the idea of basing the whole thing on two versions of the Jesu meine Freude, Johann Kruger, who preceded Bach, and then Bach's own setting. That's the most beautiful thing imaginable.
Well, we're going to have to come back and devote a program to the whole of this symphony. I love the way Bob Riley describes it. I love the way our friend Bob Riley in Surprised by Beauty describes. He says the presto impetuo movement is pure exhilaration. The still part comes in a deeply ruminative largo, which is almost Arver Pärt-like in its approach to the very edge of silence. Then Bob writes, this is followed by a highly animated allegro and capped off with a sprinting vivace.
Yeah.
That's something we have to listen more to in a future program. But let's listen now to two tracks. It's going to begin with the ending of the sixth movement, John, you described as quoting Bach's Jesu, meine Freude. And then the short seventh movement of the Ninth Symphony. Let's listen. We've just heard the last 3 minutes of John Kintzler's Ninth Symphony. And, John, I hope I picked the right section of that sixth movement. Tell me I did.
Absolutely right, Deal. Yes, thank you very much. Absolutely.
I mean,
the Vivace finale to it, so I haven't had the second version played yet.
Oh, you have a different seventh movement?
Yes, it's an extended version of what's there, and hopefully on the next outing I'll have that particular one included.
How much longer is it?
I would say 45 seconds, something like that.
Yeah, it's doubled, so you've doubled the length of it.
Yes. Yes.
Well, it does end rather abruptly, and I guess that's why you decided to lengthen it out a little bit.
Yes, it's extended. So, Maybe I'll have that one on CD at some stage. So we'll have
well, we're working on it. So how are your present composition projects coming, John?
Well, you know, we have a project of mutual interest.
Yes, a tone poem.
Absolutely. So I have some sketches in front of me here right now.
Oh, wonderful. Moment.
And hopefully I will have the energy to follow that through.
Do I need to send you a bottle of your favorite? Do I need to send you a bottle of your favorite whiskey or what?
I actually don't drink, do you?
Oh, really? You're an Irishman that doesn't drink.
Absolutely, it's just awfully boring. So, anyway, we'll save any celebrations to see if I can actually write the piece. So, it's my project for the moment.
Well, I plan on coming over.
Thank you very much for your basic idea, which is amazing.
Well, that was a privilege for me to offer one. And as you told me in one interview, you often write out a narrative of your a verbal narrative of what it is you're going to write. And so
that
gave me an opening to be of help.
Absolutely. And I found it very useful. It was quite beautiful, really. So I hope I can do your idea justice, Deal.
Well, what we'll do is we'll get it written, get it recorded, and then I can read the idea out, and we can listen to the music that came out of your out of your mind and heart. I would like to replay something we played earlier, and that is the opening to the third movement of your third symphony. And we're going to play another a minute or two, and then stop and. Thank you for being on the show, but I want our listeners to hear that once again. Let's listen. You can buy the CD or download it. It's John Kinsella's Third Symphony coupled with the Fourth on Marco Polo. Just gorgeous piece of music and the Fourth as well. John, thanks for being on Church and Culture again.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you.
Look forward to having you back in the near future. We have a lot more music to listen to and talk about.
Thank you very much. Take care.
To all your listening, we'll have another great guest after this short break.